not have to operate through a license through non-Jews. They did not need the imprimatur of the church. And they developed printing to a very, very strong degree. And this printing press, I have, for instance, in my library, I have a first edition, one of the few, I shouldn't say valuable, all the books are valuable, but probably valuable even from someone who cannot read it. The first edition of the Shailos and Tshuvos Chacham Tzvi, which was published in 1712. Printed and published in 1712, the original binding, the original print. Every sheet of paper is rag, it's linen rag. I mean, it shows no sign of deterioration, the binding. And he writes there in the introduction that he had this book in manuscript for many, many years, but he only wanted to print it in Amsterdam. Because Amsterdam, he said, if you want to get a book printed, that's where to get it printed. The Jews were very big in printing in Amsterdam. The Jews also from Amsterdam, that's the first appearance of the diamond business in Europe, and how Jews came into the diamond business, even though the mines of South Africa were not yet operating, but the Jews were in it. The Jews were also in lens grinding and glasses, one of the major advances of the Western world. Bifocals, all of those ideas. The Jews were very active in that in Amsterdam. And it is under the Jewish influence that Holland became a world power. Holland became one of the great world colonial powers. Even though in terms of natural resources and in terms of population and everything else, it had no right to be that. But it had the impetus to be that. It had the will to be that. And that was contributed to it by the Spanish Jews who came there and the Muranos who came later. The Muranos who came to Amsterdam, almost all of them officially resumed their Jewishness, took it on openly again, and after a period of time they were integrated into the community. Amsterdam was Catholic. This is right before the Protestant Reformation. But again, they were not Frum. They were not really, you know, they didn't take it that seriously. That's why they were able to do it. If you'll go up in the Spanish Portuguese synagogue next door, there's the library. If you climb to the rotunda, there is a membership list, a book, membership list of its members in the 1500s and the 1600s. I mean, there you can see, for instance, Spinoza's name with a line through it when he was excommunicated, you know. They got guys up there for non-payment of dues also, I'd say. Very interesting. But if you'll go there, you will see that they have a code, again, as to who was a Murano and who wasn't. There's a code by the name. And that gradually, after 50 years, 60 years, you see the code disappear. And everybody was again the same. But in the beginning, there was a code. And I imagine that it was hard, again, it was very hard for those Jews who gave up everything and fled to act with complete equanimity to the Muranos who came 20 or 30 years later and hadn't taken the chance with them. Okay.